Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm co-host Ron Edwards, coming to you from the Twin Cities. This is On Point, a beautiful Saturday here in the Twin Cities, if you will. A typical fall day for early October, if you will, the very earliest of October, the first, if you will. Co-host Don Allen will not be with us again this afternoon. We are expecting his return sometime in the near future, if you will. But we will continue to move on and examine some of the issues of the day. We certainly encourage you to join us on my international edition of Black Focus 2. Tomorrow, 3 to 3:30, as we take a look at the most recent American military action in Yemen. Alawi has been identified as one of the American terrorists killed in Yemen in an American military action. Feel free to join us tomorrow from 3 to 3:30. Black Focus 2, as we take a look at the ramifications and implications of America's latest activity. One thing we must say on this latest action against an American terrorist, as the American media is reporting, when President Barack Obama issues a directive in which there is a executive action, as we used to call it, against a quote-unquote person who is perceived to be an enemy of the United States, the conservatives applaud him. And so, in other words, if this president assigns the task of taking the life of a person of color, he's an okay guy, if you will. You know, we even toast him with a Bud Light, if you know what I'm saying. Interesting philosophy, interesting psychology in the United States of America. But again, we'll be going more into depth edition Black Focus 2, 3 to 3:30 tomorrow on Blog Radio, same channel configurations and et cetera. We will also be opening the phone lines next Thursday on our 1.5 hour program on Blog Radio, Black Focus 2, Thursday edition from 7 to 8:30 on Blog Radio. We'll be opening the phone lines, taking questions and inquiries. We had a rather interesting series of questions this past Thursday as we took a look at a situation that is a reminder of just how far the black leadership in these cities have slipped, if you will. There are some, I can well remember Louis King and others, who maintain that individuals such as myself are critical and attack the African-American community. Now, we're not about that, but we are about keeping information in front of the African-American community. And if keeping that information in front of the African-American community becomes indicting, if you will, against the corruption, malfeasance, and mismanagement that is going on and is being directed against the African-American community, then so be it. You know what I'm saying? And that then brings us to a piece that was the highlight of our Thursday night program, which can be acquired through On Demand. For those of you that are followers, both in our domestic and international audience, by using the technical provision of On Demand, one can recapture our program of this past Thursday, Black Focus 2, yours truly as the host. As we talked about something that it was really shattering as it pertains to confidence or a lack of it, if you will, and it had to do with a situation that took place just a week ago today, this afternoon. In fact, it would be about an hour and a half ago, a week ago, that people were under the impression that a young man by the name of Jawan Osborne, who was gunned down in North Minneapolis right there along Lowry and Emerson and Fremont, a young man who had been shot the week previous by assassins who, for whatever reason, were attempting to take his life. They had wounded him in the leg. His mother had been asking for help and assistance from leaders, if you will, in the community. it appears that they were nowhere close to being successful in that Mr. Osborne, Dewan Osborne, was gunned down in front of a local church, which led to a major confrontation amongst young black people who, that night, as they viewed the body, as they analyzed and were the target of police misconduct towards them, if you will. And then a couple of days later at Edison High School, for those of you that are not of the local community, Edison is a high school in what is northeast Minneapolis. A series of confrontations broke out in the hallways outside and the cafeteria and et cetera. And in fact, the school was locked down, if you will. Police, as they were on the night that Dewan Osborne was gunned down in the street, police had to be called in, if you will. This has become a part of a almost rite of passage, as riot police have been called out on a number of occasions here in the last couple of months to deal with quote-unquote civil uprisings from young African Americans and their supporters. We, in fact, probably, and I'm talking in terms of the program Black Focus, probably drew out the white media in this town by reporting extensively and also reporting on this program with the co-host on point here, that there had been a pitched battle in downtown Minneapolis along the Nicollet Mall, starting inside of the Hyatt Hotel, if you will, fighting that went on for almost 5 hours, culminating, as we first reported on Black Focus 2, with two individuals being stabbed, if you will, in front of Pizza Lucci's. A very interesting establishment. It's a food place, if you will, which has had numerous confrontations. But it never has had any citations. Has it been cited for citations and et cetera? Because the security contract is held by the inspector, Mike Martin of the 4th Precinct, and his wife, Ann, who hold the contract, the security contract for Pizza Lucci's. And so Pizza Lucci's is immune, if you will, from any kind of citations or review by the city council. And yet it has the largest number of assaults and other kinds of actions than any public place in downtown, including Club Karma, which has now been put out of business as an outgrowth of a ethnic clientele, which was not conducive to, quote-unquote, the future, if you will, and the image of downtown Minneapolis. And so we go into all that kind of information here on this program this Saturday on point because of what happened in the case of young Mr. Osborne. Mr. Osborne gunned down on the street. By the way, there are no suspects as we speak this afternoon. We monitored the funeral at Mr. Osborne this time last week, if you will. We were being fully briefed by electronic communication, if you will. And when it was identified to us as a journalist that the hearse had left the church there on 26th and Penn and was proceeding up 26 without any entourage and any final site activities, if you will, site being the final place of interment, if you will, be it by burial or by cremation, we knew there was a problem. We also knew that there had been leaders, if you will, who had been on television the night of Mr. Osborne's death, who had gone to great lengths to talk in terms that they had surrounded the family, if you will. They were with the family. They were there for the family, and et cetera. And you will get and find more specific details on our program this past Thursday. So we welcome you to go back on demand and listen to and review our program of this past Thursday, Black Focus 2, in which we went into significant details about what happened, how it happened, and the impact that it has had on community, the anger amongst many young African Americans who cannot understand why this young man was never interned. He was never buried. In fact, as we speak at this very second, The young man is in a refrigerator at a location controlled by Washburn McAvey, the white undertakers, who told the family that the body would not be released for interment until certain obligations were met. We give those specific obligations, again, encouraging you and inviting you to access on demand our program of this past Thursday night, where we went in, again, repeating, we went into great detail, great specificity, if you will, with the dollar amount, the circumstances that made the family realize that their loved one would not be interned, that his body would not be cremated, and that his body now is in some storage facility in a refrigerator until at such time as they can meet their obligation. We went into great detail on our Thursday program, Black Focus 2, with respect to the fact that there are thousands of dollars that are available, that are under the control of a number of individuals as an outgrowth of the so-called tornado relief effort, but an effort that deals with many aspects of community, including mental health problems and et cetera. We are aware that the policy of the tornado relief group is that monies can be allocated, if you will, for any number of situations in which hardship, mental and otherwise, has been imposed upon the community. Needless to say, I would think, my friends, that in a situation in which a community was grieving the death of another young man, a 16-year-old who unfortunately joined a 13 and 14-year-olds who had been executed, shot to death on the streets in the previous 20-some days, that certainly those actions, that hardship, that heartbreak, and et cetera, would certainly guarantee that the $600,000 that Lewis King and others of the powerful, very powerful Tornado Relief Committee is sitting on, if you will, the Minneapolis Foundation, who has raised in excess now, according to documents being provided to the state of Minnesota, in excess of $2 million, if you will, that it seems to me that certainly an appropriate amount could have been exercised, if you will, from that $600,000. Yes, yes, yes. For you tornado victims out there, or your friends, or et cetera, who are listening to us here on Point, there is significant money that allegedly has been set aside to help you, if you will. As we first reported, both on this program and on Black Focus 2, the University of Minnesota has activated the Cicchetti plan. That is the plan of Dr. Dante Cicchetti, formerly of Rochester, New York, and the Queens, New York City. Dr. Cicchetti and his surrogates very much involved in experimental mental health medicine in the African-American community. In fact, we will share with you on this program, go into greater details next Thursday night. If people are interested, again, we will give the phone number out at that time, that we are aware that there has been a very, very in-depth examination of the mental stability of the African-American community as an outgrowth of the tornado and the outgrowth of this significant spike, and I mean a tremendous spike, in the deaths of young African-Americans on the streets of this city, and which at this particular hour, 90% of them are unsolved, and in fact, we probably don't have any suspects, if you will. Let us also indicate on this particular note, this particular platform, particularly for our domestic and international audience, the level of venom that is coming from the white a conservative right here in North Minneapolis, if you will. Some individuals actually having relationships politically and otherwise with some of our quote-unquote Negro leaders, if you will, and that is the legendary Johnny Hoff, a.k.a. Johnny Northside, one of the prime conservative white bloggers here in the Twin Cities, who has taken up a personal crusade against the family of Rondé Gomez, the 13-year-old child, gunned down in the streets, left unattended for two hours, before this child was found approximately 52 yards from where he was originally shot. Some police, and there's great suspicion about this, making no real effort to find the young man who was later to expire, laying between two houses there along Russell Avenue in North Minneapolis, having been shot, bled to death as he went into shock and laid there. And yet, Johnny Northside, the legendary Johnny Huff, who allegedly is on military duty somewhere in the world, if you will, has, as we said just minutes ago, has made a personal crusade against the family of young Mr. Gomez, if you will, raising questions about Mr. Gomez's mother, if you will, his grieving mother, her aunt, who is a twin sister, if you will, attacking other members of his family and being allowed and given information of a homicide that is unsolved of a member of the Gomez family, an uncle, if you will, gunned down in this city in 1995. The information, the cold case information, which is supposed to be closed, if you will, being leaked to Johnny Northside, if you will. Johnny Northside implying in a number of emails, though we now understand that he is standing down somewhat, but the damage has been done. Conservative elements, neo-Nazis and others on their Facebook postings indicating and applauding Johnny Northside for exposing this so-called African-American criminal family, the Gomez family, which is just outrageous. African-American leadership asked to speak out on behalf of the Gomez family. They declined. They refused, if you will. In that particular corresponding period, that four-day period, where first young Mr. Braxton, 14 years of age, was gunned down at 17th and Morgan, and then 4 days later, Mr. 13-year-old Mr. Gomez, gunned down along the 1600 block of Russell. Leaders, B.J. Smith of Mad Dads, who was supposed to be involved in helping the Osborne family in the preparations and et cetera, along with the family minister, Reverend Jerry McAfee, if you will. But B.J. Smith holding, along with elected officials and others, a series of memorials and et cetera, raising money, if you will, and et cetera. And yet, Mr. Braxton was buried at services at Shiloh International Ministry. I could never understand how Bishop Howe, may God smile upon him, if you will, could have conducted the service. And this young man, Mr. Braxton, was interned in a wooden box. I mean, you don't put people in the United States of America nowadays, you don't bury people in wooden boxes unless they are inmates who have died of old age and there's no one left to claim the body, and they are buried by the Department of Corrections. And it's not been explained even now on why Mr. Braxton could not be put into a decent casket. But the most outrageous question today in the city, though, as we said before, Negro leadership here have been told by the chief police, the legendary Tim Dolan, that these matters are not to be discussed, and also there is to be no criticism of Johnny Northside and his vicious, extremely vicious attack upon the Gomez family. As we said, he attacked both the mother, the aunt, if you will, stayed away from the father for whatever reason. The father, a hardworking African-American employed with a government agency for 19 years, I guess Johnny Northside and his supporters decided to stay away from attacking the father, but they have done a hatchet job not only on the mother and one of the aunts, but they have done a hatchet job on this 13-year-old child, as we said just minutes ago, and we stand behind that with respect to our own investigative efforts, specifically through Black Focus 2 and the National Research Institute out of Long Beach, California. Neo-Nazi extremists have taken up the chant, if you will, that the death of the 13-year-old African-American on the 24th of August, if you will, in North Minneapolis was justified, whatever the hell that means, if you know what I'm saying. How do you justify gunning down a 13-year-old child in the streets? I mean, how is that, quote-unquote, justifiable, if you will? But Johnny Northside, to his credit, was able to convince a significant cadre of individuals, not only locally but around the country, who access his blog site. I think Johnny's blog site is called The Adventures of Johnny Northside, if you will. But his attack on this 13-year-old African-American child has certainly had the necessary and expected results, if you will. The police, in fact, just a couple days ago, told the father, who is the legal guardian, for those that may have that question, that there is no progress in the case and that they are moving on to other kinds of issues. You know, we know as a journalist here, we've been here and lived in this city since 1945, if you will, that if this had been three white youngsters gunned down on the streets of our city, ages 13, 14, and 16, we would have had a state of emergency declared, if you will. Just in the last week and a half, we've had three little girls who have been allegedly approached by pedophiles and perverts, and that has been a big news item, and yet there has been nothing. Ever since the article came out, which talked in terms that a relative of young Mr. Gomez had been arrested for allegedly firing on a Minneapolis police car on the night of the 25th of July. These dates are important because it is now rumored in many different quarters that because an informant misidentified members of the Gomez family, two of whom are in custody for the alleged one specifically for the alleged terrorist attack on a Minneapolis police car, that lo and behold, we now hear that the informant initially gave the wrong name. He identified the 13-year-old child as the sniper, and of course that's all that many of the police needed to hear, if you will. And I don't know, my friends, maybe that explains the callousness, if you will, and the lack of successful quote-unquote search by the police on the night of the 24th of August, when a young man was left to die, if you will, for two hours. You know, Matt McKinney and others with the local white newspapers have refused to report that to you, many of you, some of you who are listening in to this program and go about talking in terms that you are leaders and you are responsible for responsible actions. You see, there are some out there, my friends, particularly in our international audience, who would maintain that this is irresponsible by this commentator, R. Edwards, to make mention of this situation and et cetera, as if the revealing of these details will some way or another hamper the investigation. Well, I can tell you officially, my friends, that there is no progress and there is no real effort going into the investigation. In fact, the medical examiner of Hennepin County, Dr. Baker, medical examiner, if you will, very powerful white man, has told the father, the legal guardian of young Mr. Gomez, that the family will not be provided with the actual cause of death, because if you get into the cause of death, then you get into the total circumstances, including the fact that for almost an hour that child lived as he laid there between those two houses, if you will. And so an agreement between the county medical examiner, Dr. Baker, and the Minneapolis Police Department under the auspices of Chief Tim Dolan, and of course with the full support of Mayor R.T. Ryback, yes, Mayor R.T. Ryback, you're in on it, is that information be withheld. And, you know, normally a commentator would say that it is important, it is imperative for the community to rise to the occasion, to ask the right clarifying questions, if you will, et cetera. But you see, as we said earlier, the chief of police, if you will, and the mayor have given instructions to Negro leadership in this city that particularly in the case of the death of young Mr. Gomez, a 13-year-old African-American child, that Negro leadership are not to ask any questions, nor are they to provide any support to the Gomez family. No support whatsoever. And so consequently, Dr. Baker, just 6 days ago, Dr. Baker, you told the father of the 13-year-old young African-American gunned down in the streets of this city, you told the father that, Negro, you will not receive any information, you will not be provided with any information that this office, the Office of the Medical Examiner, is required by color and under color of law to provide to the family, and specifically to you, the father, the legal guardian. Yes, the white medical examiner here in Hennepin County told the father of a 13-year-old Negro child, black child, African-American child, whatever your reference is other than the N-word that is used by the neo-Nazis and Johnny Northside and others who support his cause, that you are obligated, sir, under color of law, to provide to this grieving family all of the information relevant to the circumstances in which this 13-year-old child died, if you will. And yet, my friends, particularly those in the broader domestic community and the international community, leadership here have been so compromised that they don't even speak out when a young African-American is refused burial by a white undertaker, as happened last Saturday, whose body is still in a cold storage facility somewhere in our metropolitan area. And when a white medical examiner, who under color of law in the state of Minnesota is an office of significant power, tells the grieving father and grieving family members of a 13-year-old black child shot down, gunned down, brutally murdered in the streets of this city, the Negro, I will not, as the medical examiner, provide you with any information because I cannot provide you with information which may help you bring a civil and legal action against the authorities. And let me repeat and make you understand. On that night, on the night of the 24th of August in the year of our Lord, 2011, two young African Americans were shot. One shot in the back. He survived. The second one, young Mr. Gomez, 13 years old, was shot. In fact, we have declined, we have refused to indicate where he was shot because we've been at least hoping and praying that the leadership of this city, those who maintain and tell y'all, and particularly those that have made so much money during this period following the tornado in our city of May 22nd, I mean, these Negroes have handled over $2.6 million has come in through the Minneapolis Foundation and others, according to documents that are now being accessed, if you will. They themselves, the Tornado Relief Committee, if you will, and by the way, this is on audio, if you will, as well as there are numerous. We are aware of a white alternative newspaper here in the city that is just doing a job, if you will, on some of the discussions and some of the statements that were made in the recovery committee in the period of 27 May until just the first, second Wednesday of this month. $600,000 that is being control right now that these folks are sitting on. Yes, yes, Major King. Oh, yes, Major King, just quite a study, a military person, if you will, has been put in charge by order of the mayor. Actually, the mayor provided that. And we've been waiting for any kind of challenge because we have in our possession a document which is the structural outline for the creation and the configuration, if you will, of the so-called Tornado Relief Committee. You know, Major King, you've been telling folks that that was your creative idea and et cetera. That's not true, sir. On that Wednesday at approximately 3:30, you received an outline and structured outline of how the committee would be put together on the following day, the 27th day of May, who the people were that would be positioned, how they would be utilized, what their responsibilities and expectations of those responsibilities were. That the structure of this committee was put together by white political forces in this city. And it was a well-conceived plan, because what has basically happened is at least $500,000 has been spent, has disappeared, has gone for all of the luxuries, if you will, that represents corruption, greed, and graft, if you will. New cars, new clothes, you know, taking care of girlfriends or boyfriends, buying drugs, whoops, and things like that. Oh, I understand that we're not supposed to talk about that. I know, in fact, that On Point has been under some pressure in some quarters not to discuss these particular items, but I'm in the cat seat today, if you will. And so, as we always do, you're welcome. Upon the return of my co-host, we will be able to be back with the phone lines. But the phone lines are not silent as it pertains to my own program, if you will, Black Focus 2 on Thursdays from 7 to 8:30. Our phone lines are open. If you've got any questions, if you want a quote-unquote debate, if you will, or if you want to quote-unquote stand up for your buddies and for corruption and for reversal and nullification, hey, our phone lines on Thursday on Black Focus 2 are open. Want to hear your voice. Now, of course, one of the things you have to understand that in this particular situation, given the level of corruption and malfeasance that's at play, as we recognize your voice, we're going to call your name out. We're going to identify you to the world, make sure the folks know who you are and what part of group and what part you play and what groups that you're involved in. Now, we go back to the tragedy of the Gomez family, to what hardships they have been forced into, and how really effective Johnny Northside has been with respect to the kind of information that he has put out, information which came directly from high-ranking police officers as a part of the overall scenario that we laid out earlier to you, and that is to protect the city as it pertains to its negligence in the death of the 13-year-old Gomez, that 13-year-old child who for an hour at least lived, suffering, could have been saved. My friends, I repeat again to you, and, you know, we had thought at some point in time that there were some of you leaders out there, if you will, that would step up to the plate, be you male or female. You know, we hear all this rhetoric about the sisters need to step up, the sisters need to do it, and et cetera. Because of the size of the Gomez family, if you will, these are actually five large families, two of which have direct connections by birth to the Latino-Hispanic community. Even that side of the family, the Latino-Hispanic-Mexican side of the family, are asking, what kind of people are these Negro leaders, if you will? Why are they so silent? Why have they capitulated to the corruption and the lies and the attacks by Johnny Northside as he is being fed information by the Minneapolis Police Department? You see, if the Minneapolis Police Department, and more importantly, if the mayor of the city was worth his salt, if you will, there would be an examination. Because the other thing that has happened again, and one can say, let me turn off, we don't want to hear this Negro, tired and sick and tired of hearing this. Well, that's your prerogative. That's one of the beauties of being in a so-called democracy. Hell, you could be in Syria or Libya, and maybe you wouldn't be allowed that latitude. But in this case, we just thought that as a part of common decency, if you will, that based on what has happened to the Gomez family, if you will, that people would have at least reached out and stood up. The father let it be known in some quarters that he was begging. He begged. This man begged. This father who lost a 13-year-old child to assassins, to gunmen, who actually thought that he had fired, and so you figure it out based on what I'm getting ready to say and how I'm getting ready to say it to you. They his assassins thought that he had, quote-unquote, challenged the authority of the police by being involved in firing on a Minneapolis police car and two officers in front of a liquor store on the 3200 block of Penn Avenue North in Minneapolis, and that consequently an appropriate action had to be initiated against him to teach black youth a lesson. Yes, my friends. But you see, it's taboo to talk about that. It's taboo to talk about special units that are engaged and at play. I'll tell you this, though, that some of the neo-Nazis who went online to support the position of Johnny Northside, and it's interesting that Johnny Northside was not fed the information relevant to the Gomez family until after we had raised the issue with respect to the misinformation that this 13-year-old child, late in the evening on the 25th of July, had been involved in firing on a Minneapolis squad car containing two officers. It was only then that a political decision, all those of you at City Hall know how the game went, you know how the meeting went, you know what the discussions were, that a decision was made that the gunman, as being identified to them at that time by an informant who was just giving them any names that he thought they wanted to hear, that an example be made within the African-American community. And maybe that's the reason why a 13- and a 14-year-old African-American, who most people indicate didn't know each other, shouldn't have known each other per se, but probably did. They were in the same age group. They lived less than a couple of blocks from each other, and et cetera, that they were mysteriously gunned down. You see, we heard the shots and were at the scene the night of the death of Mr. Braxton. We heard those eight shots being fired, if you will, and we've heard the scenario that alleged witnesses have given, that the shots came from the dark of the park, the North Commons Park there in North Minneapolis, that gunmen fired from out of the park, if you will, hitting young Mr. Braxton many, many, many times, if you will, and he died right there at the intersection. And yet, no one has stepped up. Police say that they have been doing numerous canvassings of the area, if you will, that they allegedly have talked to quote-unquote witnesses. But we were there that night as Mr. Braxton's body lay there in the street, and we heard a African-American attempt to talk to two white police officers there in a squad car. Well, we took the number down. And the brother was saying that he had seen something, but it didn't look like African-American gunmen, but he had seen something, and the cops told him to get the hell out of there. You understand and want to hear it, if you will. And it just raises a question about who really were the assailants in the case of the first two, the 13 and the 14-year-old, if you will. And then the whole thing of young Mr. Osborne, as we said before, a gunman shot him in the leg, if you will, on our, at least a week before his death, if you will. And his mother and family members asked for assistance, asked for sanctuary, if you will. Yes, that's a good Christian word. Asked for sanctuary and protection for their loved one. But leadership, some of you who were on TV that night, the night that he was finally gunned down in North Minneapolis, this is Mr. Osborne now that we're talking about, a 16-year-old African-American. And you misrepresented the facts to the family. You really didn't undertake an effort to try to protect him. And so he was gunned down in the streets, if you will. But then you said you were going to help the family with the preparations and with the internment and et cetera. Some of you went off to Washington, D.C. to be at the Congressional Black Caucus events and have pictures taken with black Congress members and et cetera. Go to the Black Congressional Foundation to ask for money. Oh, by the way, for our listening audience, as we begin to move towards conclusion on this day's program here at On Point, that one of the great efforts that's being made. My God, you're having meetings everywhere. You had a luncheon over at the park board, if you will. White folks over there gave you lunch. Of course, they've got the only program in the city right now that deals with intervention, if you will, on the streets of the city, if you will, Youthline, which was first funded in February of 2010, if you will. But anyways, they had you over for lunch, and y'all sat around, and you talked, and you screamed and hollered. A couple weeks before that, you had a meeting at the Urban League with the head of the Minneapolis Health Department. You were demanding $4, 5, 6, 7, 8 million. The white woman, the head, the head of the Minneapolis Health Department said there's $40,000 on the table for y'all. But anyways, your surrogates, if you will, your proxies, if you will, your representatives, however you want to identify them, went off to Washington, D.C. to solicit and audition, if you will, for monies so that they could, quote-unquote, deal with the problem that they've been, quote-unquote, dealing with for over 20 years. And I mean profitable. Here, my friends, for those of you that do not know our city, this enclave, if you will, that we have some of these leaders who have gone through $15 million or more over the last 15 or 20 years, if you will, with respect to what they're doing and how they are, quote-unquote, doing it, if you will. And so it is unfortunate today that we don't have our co-host with us and that we are not able to open the phone lines, if you will. We assume that there are some of you out there that have some questions. You know, if you don't, you should. You know what I mean? And so we've given you just here, for the purposes of reflection, three cases of three young African-Americans, 13, 14, and 16, gunned down in this city. And, oh, by the way, it was just only yesterday, 2 weeks after this young man was gunned down along the 3200 block of Blaisdell in South Minneapolis, that they were finally able to come up with enough money. By the way, the same white undertaker that had the body of the young man this yesterday, Washburn McCleavy, is the same one that is holding hostage the body of young Mr. Osborne, if you will. Oh, by the way, let us tell you very quickly, because these programs are about information and et cetera. For those of you who may have the misfortune of having a loved one caught up in the violence of this city, one thing that you always want to do is that you want to, in writing, indicate to the medical examiner, Dr. Baker, that you want the body of the deceased, male or female, entrusted to an African-American undertaker. We're not promoting anyone, but we're telling you what the real policy is, because the policy in this city is that upon completion of the examination, the medical examiner has a list of white morticians. And the reason, my friends, you know why they send them to the white morticians? Because it's big business here in our city to harvest the life organs. Yes, yes, lungs, pancreas, kidneys, liver, heart. Big, 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 big money. We, in fact, first asked this question on the program Black Focus, our television program, which has been on the air for 20 years here in the Twin Cities. We first raised that question a couple of years ago when we became aware of the amount of money that was being made, quote unquote, by medical institutions and others from the harvesting, if you will, that's the proper medical term, of the life organs, internal organs of young African Americans, male and female, who die in situations of violence. And one of the slick things that they're doing now, so that there will be no exhuming of the body, for those of you that unfortunately have seen the tragedy of a loved one or a friend or et cetera, is that white undertakers encourage black folks now to cremate the bodies. I can well remember a case many years ago in which a young African-American was killed right up there off Glenwood and Penn Avenue. For those of you that have that kind of remembrance, he was asphyxiated, really, because one of the things that police in this city like to do, and they've been very effective with it, particularly when that new foam pepper gas, pepper spray came out, and that is, particularly if they have you tied up, they have you hog-tied, they like to open your mouth and shoot that foam into your mouth. It makes you suffocate. Well, there was a young African-American that had happened to. There were a number of witnesses, though, which meant that there was going to be some serious consequences. And lo and behold, I'll never forget this, a couple of our black leaders went and advised the family and told them, rather than ship the body back to Cleveland, y'all know who I'm talking about, don't you, that they should have the body cremated. And a couple of years later, less than a year and a half later, in our city here, that young man who was asphyxiated by the police, suffocated, quote-unquote, there off Glenwood. When they got ready to talk about it, it was too late because the body had been cremated. How many, I'll ask you this question, my friends, tonight on this program as we move towards conclusion, the last 11 minutes or so, how many of these young African Americans, male and female, particularly those that are not handled by black morticians, if you will, but are handled particularly by white morticians, such as Washburn, McCleavy, and others, how many of those youngsters do you think have had their organs harvested? And by the way, you're talking about fetching a fee of anywhere up to $250,000 for a healthy organ, if you will, particularly a lung and such. In fact, I remember a situation, again, just a couple of years ago. Young man, if you remember, drove his car into a crowd and killed a couple of young people. Well, one of the young African-Americans that died, was killed, expired in that particular situation. His lungs were harvested, if you will. And lo and behold, if in fact, at least in this case, they were used as part of a transplant for an older African-American, if you will. But the family of the young man in question had no idea that the hospital and the insurance companies and others made about $200,000+ off of those lungs, if you will, and that transplant that took place, if you will. And so that's something that, again, we're not supposed to talk about, if you will. And so one has to understand that this goes on. Now, one would say, well, if that's true, then why would Washburn McCleavy, in the case of Osborne, delay the cremation of his body? Well, businesses sometimes maintain they need to get theirs up front, and that if people don't know that these kinds of situations exist, if you will, that these kinds of quote-unquote illegal protocols are in place, then greed takes over, and people will sometimes jeopardize the big hustle, if you will, the big picture, because they want to get as much money as they possibly can. That's the only reason it doesn't happen with the immediacy that should have happened with young Mr. Osborne. Just something for you to think about. That's how things work in so many of the great urban areas, rural areas for that matter, of America, if you will. Black Americans, in many respects, are nothing more than guinea pigs. And in fact, in some of the discussions that the mayor and others have had, particularly after he submitted his proposal to the League of Cities in 2009, indicating that the crime problem in his city of Minneapolis had to do with mental health and et cetera, that's wherein we go back to the top of this program when we talked about the legendary Dr. Cecchetti, Dante Cecchetti, if you will. In fact, black leaders in this town have been told that they are not to mention Dr. Cecchetti's name, even though the UROC Center, the University of Minnesota's research center right there in the heart of the black community, where seminars and sessions are held, discussions take place at a low level. The real top-notch levels are certainly held within the safe confines of controlled situations, University of Minnesota, if you will, corporate, if you will, and et cetera. But they have been told that they are not to raise any questions about the Cecchetti Project, as it is referred to, if you will, or how many young African Americans, both parents and their children, are being medicated as we speak. And just so one understands who are listening to this program this afternoon, that yes, we have been responsible and due diligent, if you will. First thing that white folks and some coloreds talk about,
well, you know, what have you done? Are you due diligent? Why, certainly we've been due diligent. We've been due diligent for a long, long time. We wrote about this in one of our columns about 6 weeks ago in the Spokesman Recorder. We even identified the drugs that have been authorized and assigned to the African-American community, particularly young mothers, preferably young African-American mothers, single heads of households, and et cetera. Oops. And we talked about that. But yet again, black leadership, the African-American Alliance, the African-American Leadership Group, all of these folks, you know, were basically told to stand down. Don't raise certain questions. And the genesis for corroborating, if you will, these things that we're saying to you, for those of you that don't know, for those of you that don't live here, for those of you that think that this is a great liberal enclave, if you will, with a mayor who, quote-unquote, supports R.T. Ryback, supports Barack Obama, and et cetera. With that kind of support, Adolf Hitler would rule the world today, if you know what I mean. But the documentation is there, but you'll never gain access to it because leadership have been told. And you go back and you research and you take a look at the issues that the groups that we just previously named just minutes ago, the Black Leadership Alliance, if you will, under the Northwest Area Foundation and et cetera, another one of those foundations that gives significant amounts of money to clinical and medical research in the African-American communities, if you will, particularly around the issue of mental health. You know, the mental health thing since the tornado has really become a big-ticket item, and Dr. Chiquette has, quote-unquote, been very appreciative of the fact that the tornado came through because it put back on track the plan that he was initially brought here from Rochester, New York, to begin implementation of, if you will, the Chiquette Project, if you will, experimental medicine. There are some, of course, long gone, who were members of the Nazi regimes of the 1930s and early 40s, Dr. Mengele and others, if you will, the Butcher of Buchenwald and Osquart, and et cetera, would be absolutely thrilled. They would be ecstatic, if you will, if they could see how well it is being done here. And now we step back to the early portions of this program. You may be able to correlate it. You may be able not to at this point, but it gives you a better understanding on why a father whose 13-year-old child was gunned down in the streets of Minneapolis and there are no suspects, why that father is told by the medical examiner of the county in which this happened, Dr. Baker, that we will provide no information to you or your family, sir. You know, we will do it when the investigation is completed. Well, the fact of the matter is the police investigate the death and the circumstances surrounding the death. The medical examiner investigates and examines the actual causes medically and otherwise. Can you believe it, my friends, as we move towards closure of this Saturday's program? Can you believe a medical examiner, if you will, telling a white family who has lost their loved one to an act of extreme aggressive violence, if you will, that we will provide you with no information as it pertains to the death of your child? Can you believe the outrage that would happen? Could you believe the number of white lawyers that would tear down the doorway to the home of that family in order to represent their interest, if you will? Now, of course, if they were poor white folks, then they would join black people, irrespective of, by and large, what your economic or financial status is, in being denied, quote-unquote, equal opportunity, if you will. I mean, think about it, my friends. I know it's hard to swallow for some of you who really want to try to do the right thing. In fact, in some situations in the last 4 minutes of today's program, it's a culture shock. In fact, it creates a psychological imbalance, really, to what people like to think exists for them, the kind of world, quote-unquote, that they reside in, if you will, that there is a doctrine of fairness. In fact, many
young African Americans, sometimes encouraged by older Negroes who should know better, if you will, are being told that things have changed, things are better, and et cetera. No, they're not. In fact, it's amazing how just in the 3 years that President Barack Obama has been in power as President of the United States, that the system has made sure that black people understand one specific thing, and that is, don't no one monkey stop no show. And we hate to do it like that, but we do it for impact. In other words, this black man, and by the way, understand that we, only speaking for ourselves, as American voter who has never missed an election and never missed a vote, that I would vote again for Barack Obama. But maybe I understand a little bit better than the average person, and I'm not a well-educated man. I'm not a trained, quote-unquote, social scientist or et cetera, per se. But I understand how this system really works. And in closing, coming back to quote-unquote, the legendary Johnny Northside, Johnny Huff, if you will, it has been amazing the way that he has destroyed the reputation and the image of the Gomez family, the Rodriguez family, the Funchy family, if you will, and others. It is amazing how he has destroyed that family by saying that the circumstances and the ultimate consequences of a 13-year-old child being gunned down in the streets by unknown assailants, that it's all right, it's acceptable. It's what you, quote-unquote, get for being a part of the criminal element, if you will, when there is no empirical proof or documentation that this 13-year-old child was a part of any kind of criminal syndicate and et cetera. But Johnny was fed enough information that he was able to commingle, if you will, the information pertaining to the 13-year-old and the information pertaining to his two 17- and 18-year-old cousins. It was an amazing job, but Johnny Northside wouldn't have been able to do that if he had not been helped by some segments. And notice what we said, by some segments of the Minneapolis Police Department. That's the reason that Johnny's Aryan Brotherhood, brethren, if you will, applauded, because they recognized what he was doing and what he had been assigned to do. They, too, are doing it all across the country. Whenever the question is raised about the circumstances of the deaths of young African Americans found laying in the middle of the streets, found laying, quote-unquote, in alleyways or bodies burnt and et cetera, or just those young Negroes who disappear, you see, what has become acceptable, and it is unfortunate and regrettable and most of the time a misrepresentation, is that these are bad people and that bad people do in other bad people, if you will. And so as a consequence of that, they really don't matter. The only problem is that when we start identifying bad people on the other side of the aisle, you know what I'm saying, my friends, as part of death squads and et cetera, oops, run and managed by local law enforcement, then all of a sudden that is a taboo. That is a no-no. That is something that we should not be allowed to refer to. And all of a sudden, by the way, First Amendment goes out the window. But again, the man of the hour in many respects in this city, Johnny Huff, Johnny Northside, and the way that he has twisted on behalf of his handlers all of the concern and sympathy for the death of a 13-year-old African-American child whose father has been told that there is no intention of ever solving the case, if you will. Hey, my friends, if you decide to move or relocate, et cetera, welcome to Minnesota at the headwaters of the Mississippi River. This is truly the Shangri-La. It's not a Shangri-La for black people, but then who in the hell cares? This is On Point. I am co-host Ron Edwards. Hopefully my co-host, Mr. Allen, will be rejoining us in the next couple of Saturdays. But for those of you that are still on and still engaged and still listening and who are really black, may God continue to have his hand upon your shoulder, because God knows y'all need his support. I'm Ron Edwards. This is On Point. Good afternoon.